Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We are brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series, by VeloFix.com, the coolest mobile bike shop around, by ATVSwimSpas.com, the official training vessel for six-time Ironman World Champion Dave Scott, by our Challenged Athletes Foundation. ChallengedAthletes.com is where you can donate to CAF. We just sent out 2,448 grants, totaling $3.7 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out on Babbittville.com, on iTunes, and as always, endurance lives here in studio. Mr. Carl Bakke, whose new book, Fade to Black, has just come out to rave reviews. Carl, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing really, really well. And what I'm excited about, because this all this stuff intrigues me, all this stuff with, you know, because you started out as an actor, and how, what got you in acting?
Well, I actually graduated from Florida State, and I hosted a TV show down there on CBS, which my buddy and I, who now actually produces Naked and Afraid.
Yeah, oh, really?
Yeah, we'd put together a little show with little broken cable stuff we had, and eventually we took that show from cable TV to the CBS affiliate there. So I kind of had a beeline into broadcast, but acting is something I always loved.
Right.
But was cautioned not to major in that because you're never going to make a living. You're not going to do anything. But I was passionate about it. So I auditioned for the American Academy of Dramatic Arts and got accepted and decided to pack up and move from up in New York to out in LA.
And a lot of commercial work.
Yeah, I was lucky. I fell into the commercial gig, which is a very specific type of work, but
sure.
it pays well because you get the residuals every time it airs.
Right.
Back then. And I was lucky enough, I did over 40-some national commercials.
Wow.
From everything from being the Denerex guy, you know, with the line down his head with the shampoo, every car and beer you could think of. And that sort of funded me to do, you know, other type of acting, theater, pursue
yes.
other things like that. So I felt real fortunate to be able to fall into that. I didn't really know about that much and had a long career as a commercial actor and as in other types of actor.
So when you go from being an actor to writing.
Yes.
What was your entree into writing?
Well, I'd always written a little bit, and acting is very frustrating in a way.
Yeah.
I always analogize it that if you're an artist and you want to paint a painting or you want to be a writer, you can go in your room, you can do that.
Sure.
Somebody might not buy it or like it, but you're still allowed to have that creative outflow.
Sure.
As an actor, unless you're doing it a monologue in a mirror, you're really not. So I started writing more to sort of get that creativity out
uh-huh.
that the acting career was stifling. And I was hired by a guy named Michael Grace, who was a producer. He wrote Poltergeist. And
wow.
Yeah. Very successful guy. He'd worked with Scorsese, went to NYU. And there was a show called The Travis Walton Story that was, and I played Travis Walton, and he'd hired me. It's about the most famous alien abduction. They later made a movie, Fire in the Sky.
Yeah.
The same title. So I asked him on the set one time if he would just, you know, read my short stories. I was just a young guy.
So you've been writing short stories.
I had been writing short stories as I was pursuing the acting. And,
yeah.
And, you know, here this guy was, he'd written Poltergeist. I thought, wow, he was actually going to read my little short stories. And then the next day he said, I want you in my office with three ideas to write for a film. And I'd never really thought about writing a film.
I mean, did you have a clue of scripts?
I had a clue. I actually rented a house where there was a screenwriter down below, Billy May, and I used to go down and read his scripts and
yeah.
see his process, so to speak. But I just started thinking up some ideas, and he had me over to his house in Beverly Hills. I was a little in awe.
Yes.
And I gave him my pitches, and he said, this is a good movie of the week, this is good that, but we want to write a feature film. Keep thinking.
Right.
So I thought of some ideas. I didn't know how to write a treatment. I just wrote this 60-page kind of novelette prose about this idea, sent it to him in Canada where he's producing a film, and he said, start writing it. So without
wow.
much instruction, I started in this process, and he kind of became a mentor of mine, The great thing is he never really told me what to write. I mean, I remember the first thing he said is, this is great, but this is movie dialogue. And I'm like, well, I thought we were writing a movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And he says, no, it needs to be real. And, you know, he then kind of, you know, walked me through the process. But when I finished the script, I knew it was 100% mine. And he tried to produce it, tried to get it made. And I was just hooked. I was hooked. I started writing, you know, full time for free and not making any money.
Yeah.
Still going out on auditions where I could hopefully
make
a living.
So sort of porting yourself with that, with some acting.
Supporting myself with that.
Commercials, things like that.
To be successful enough, I bought a house and
right.
need to pay the mortgage. But this was just it. I was the actor. I was the director. I was the writer. I was all the voices of the characters. And I think as an actor, it helped me to write those voices.
Sure.
And kind of rotate to there.
And make them authentic. Yeah.
And the things that came out of their mouth authentic, like an actor would. So I was hooked. And I wrote for many years for free while I continued to, you know, go out on commercial auditions and other acting auditions until this friend of mine told me that Glenn Larson, who's a legendary producer, he produced everything from and created Magnum P.I., Fall Guy,
sure.
You know, Marcus
Welby, M.D.,
oh, yeah, Battlestar Galactica. He had a series that was based off a comic book, Nightman. I didn't know anything about it. I went and got this, you know, heard it was like X-Files and superhero, and I started writing some short, you know, treatments for ideas. And eventually, through his wife, who I knew through a friend, she got him to Glenn, put him on the bedside table, and he read him, and he called me in for a meeting.
Isn't that funny how you need to, a friend of a friend.
Yes.
It's so much with connections.
Hollywood is, I have a quote in the book from Humphrey Bogart that says, if you have enough accidents happen to you in the right time in the right place, you'll be a star.
Yeah.
That's sort of how Hollywood is. You have to have the talent, but so much of it is luck and timing, like in anything in life. So I had the luck and timing on me at my side that time, and
yes.
and I met him in some dark, you know, Hollywood red booths, you know, completely dark drink all day and nobody will know the difference.
Right.
And it's Rolls Royce outside and I'm just, you know, scraping by, and he said, why should I hire you? You know, you write screenplays, not television. And I said, because I'm good. And I think, he was a very confident guy. I think he liked that answer and he gave me a shot, and that was the first job I got that actually paid.
So you started writing for
Nightman for the series, yeah.
Wow.
So that was a really big deal, and it allowed me to start to build up enough points to get into the Writers Guild. So
yes.
I could write for minimums that they have. It's a union, thank you.
Yeah,
goodness.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I kept writing, and then eventually I still couldn't get a really good agent because it's very hard to do. But I connected with some guys at Sony, and they eventually got a script of mine and gave me a development deal that was in the Hollywood Reporter with my picture. It was kind of a big deal. Then I got a good agent through that, and my next script sold as a spec script, which is something you write for speculation.
Right.
That you try to sell to the studios.
Yes.
People can bid on them, get into bidding wars, and goes, you know, the price goes up, and that was a big sale, and again in the Hollywood Reporter and the Variety and all that, and that really launched me.
So, but I think the average person listening at home goes, okay, so he got the script and it got bought and then it was made into a movie, and a lot of these scripts, you get paid for the script, which is great, but that's the beginning of the conversation. Now you got to get other funding, you got to get the right actor attached to it to get these things, to have it see the light of day.
Completely. You know, Hollywood's like a big pyramid, and you start at the bottom of the pyramid just writing in your room, you know, with no contacts and,
right.
and you know, no money. And my goal was just to, how great would this be if I could make a living doing something I love?
Yeah.
And, you know, by the time you're at the top, that's where the studios are, and that's where you have meetings at the studios, and they do get the opportunity to make films. But the majority of studio screenwriters that are at the top of that pyramid, films don't get made. They just don't. Once they're bought, it's completely out of your hands. It's
right.
up to the executives at the studios and getting the financing. A lot has to do with attaching a star.
Absolutely.
You
get the right
star. Then you get the money up front. And so it's a long, arduous process, but it's out of your hands. So your goal is to continue to write, continue to get paid, and notoriety. I mean, you might not be known as a household word, but up at the top of that little pyramid, your name circulates. And I remember that I had a handful of meetings before all this.
Yeah.
Within the first month, I had 32 meetings at a variety of different companies.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So it was life-changing. All of a sudden, I'm on the studio lots and driving through, and people are seeking me out. It was very different.
So, at that point, are they asking you to help with other people's scripts to do some rewriting?
Yeah.
The
three ways is to sell the spec script is the biggest, because that's the biggest payday.
Sure.
But then from that, they will bring you in to either look at ideas they have for you to develop a script, and you get hired for writing assignments, and then you're a hired gun. You have an idea, they have an idea, you flush out, you compete against other writers who will then want to compete against that same idea. And you flush out a whole treatment, a whole story, and then if they like it and they pick you, you get hired for a writing assignment. That pay goes up every time you get a new job.
Right.
You know, every time your quote continues to go up, your power of your agents continue to go up, and then you get a reputation. And that's sort of where I was. So I would be, brought in to look at other scripts that they wanted rewrites on or develop other ideas that they had. And I was fortunate enough that I got to work with Wes Craven for that exact.
Wow.
Yeah. That's what I thought. That's what I still think.
Yeah.
And that's just an example. So they brought me in. They'd had a book that had been made into a script. They didn't like the script. I decided just to take the kernel of the script and redo the whole story. And, of course, they were seeing other writers to do that, too. And then they picked me and, off to the races we were.
Wow.
That, of course, did not get done. And in full disclosure, I have never had a film done, even though I'm vested in the Writers Guild and have made a living at it for a long time.
And you've had how many scripts that have been bought?
A lot.
Wow.
A few.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
a lot is
be,
relative to the business. But
right, but it's got to be frustrating that you're...
It's not just the bought scripts. It's the scripts that are the writing assignments because
they
will then want to... the studios will have people they have in mind for that. And a lot of times, the writer makes the money rewriting another person's script.
Right.
So my script can be bought, and then they'll bring in another writer because they want to change the plot or the characters or something else. So you have to know this is a collaborative effort and let it go. Otherwise, it's going to drive you crazy. And my goal was just to, as I said, just make a living doing something I love and to keep the ball rolling.
You know, it's interesting. One of my writers for years was Marty Dugard at Competitor. And Marty wrote Adventure Racing and did a lot of different books on Captain Cook and Columbus. Well, then he hooked up with Bill O'Reilly and did Killing Lincoln, Killing Kennedy. And he goes, I got to the point where it was great to have my name showcased and be the main author, but being the co-writer paid a lot of bills.
Exactly.
And there's nothing wrong with that, right?
Yeah.
And it wasn't, they would work, it was collaborative, but at the end of the day, Bill O'Reilly was the star. Is that hard ego-wise? Because
it's not for me. I mean, I'm just thrilled to that, I was able to rise up to that level and make a living and be there. And I have a chance this year to possibly get a film made. It's with the producer, Arthur Sarkissian, who produced all the Rush Hour movies. He has a movie coming out with Jackie Chan out in the fall. And we're close with a studio. And so hopefully it finally happens. So that would be a great thing for me. You're like crossing that finish line finally. And
So awesome. What led you to go for a novel? Because it's one thing to create a TV series, to write scripts, but Fade to Black, a novel is, one, it's a huge commitment, right? You talk about you commit to something and you were writing for free and working as an actor to pay the bills, but you were writing because you loved it.
Yes.
But going the novel route is, because then once you have a novel, then it's still, you got to eventually build a screenplay around the novel. How hard was it to make that commitment to write a novel?
Well, it was, there's ebbs and flows in the career. So I was able to write at different stages.
Yeah.
But I really wanted to get back to what I'd started with the short story writing, which is the narrative writing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very liberating because a screenplay, and most people have never read a screenplay, but it's very structured. Each page is supposed to be about 1 minute of film time.
Yes.
It's about 120 pages. There's three acts. There's a plot point that takes the plot in different direction every the 30 pages. But you can't, when you're reading it, it's only what the actor is doing and what he's saying. So you can't write what he's thinking. You can't just say in the screenplay that, he's so angry or he's this. You have to show that by an action. He throws down a dish and breaks it. He bows his head because he's upset, something like that. So when you read a screenplay, you can see that movie in your head. And, you know, like as Steven Spielberg said, if it's not on the page, it's not on the stage. You can really take that, a director can, and just, you know, follow it. But in a book, what's nice is you're inside the characters' heads. You're there. And you can tell their thoughts and what they taste, what they feel, what they touch. So I wanted to get back to that liberation. And also, in terms of page count, you know, you have a through line that's your plot that's going to always be there.
Sure.
But you can go off with the characters in a direction, and then you can tie it back in. So it's very liberating, and I really enjoyed it. I love it.
So I was just on TV. I love that.
As always.
As always, yeah. So the character, Will Spire.
Yeah.
Where did that come from? For Fade to Black. Is he sort of a compilation of a lot of the people you worked on?
Of things, and it all, you know, a lot of it takes place in Hollywood and the underbelly of Hollywood. It's a twisted thriller.
Yes.
That involves a private investigator who used to be an actor.
He was an actor. What a surprise. He used to be an actor.
Yes.
Have you always wanted to be a private investigator?
Not really, but I've had friends that have been. So
Yeah.
But he's overexposed. He was on a soap for many years, and they couldn't see him as anything else. So he started working for tried to find a witness that was missing for his friend who's a lawyer, and he found him, and then he got his license and off he was going on a new career. And it's an interesting compilation of things because he is drawn into the investigation of by his ex-wife. Goes over there, and there's a murder that's happened, and he realizes there's been a line of murders targeted at people in the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
He tries to get involved and find out what's going on, pairs up with a couple real big characters that are LAPD detectives, and before he knows it, he realizes the thing is being traced back to him, and he may be the ultimate target, the ultimate victim.
So how much research do you do? You're talking about being a private investigator. That's something you don't have any background in.
I have a good friend, one of my best friends that I grew up with, who is actually a public defender. This public defender of San Diego, Randy Mize.
Yeah.
Been hanging around him a long time. He had been a private investigator at one point. So I had some clue on how the legal system worked and how this private investigating thing worked, and just took it from there. But I am a fiction writer, so
Right. But did you know when you started it, did you know where you wanted to go with it? Or was it one of those things every day you sat down and it was like sort of surprising yourself where it's going?
Well, what's nice with a book and with a screenplay, it's the same thing. I map out everything.
Oh, you do? Okay.
From the first line of the book will tie into the last line of the book. And so the structure is all there. I write a treatment out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I analogize it to framing a house. You frame a house, the frame is there. So you can't get lost in your construction when you're doing it. And then you let your creativity take over. You know, you paint the rooms, you put in the furniture, you do all that. But that structure has to be there. For me, at least. Other writers may have a different process. But I need to know where I'm going. So I don't ever start to write a page or a word until I know that's there.
Gotcha.
And then you let your individual creativity flow through the individual chapters or if it's a screenplay, scenes. But at least you know where it's going to be and where it is, and the concept is good, the story is good. And then it's really about character development, which I think is probably one of the most important things.
How long was this process of working on this book?
It was written in over years.
Years?
Yeah.
So in between other gigs that you're doing, scripts and everything else, you get back to your book.
Yes.
But you had the structure for it.
Yes,
always.
And I had the treatment from the beginning. Yeah. I ever wrote the first line.
That's amazing.
And I try to write puzzle piece thrillers.
Yes.
And so it has a very big hook in the end.
Yeah.
Very big surprise.
Yeah.
And that's sort of what I always do. I write character-driven puzzle piece thrillers, whether it's a screenplay or not. So that all has to be mapped out. Otherwise, it's not gonna flow.
So it used to be, you know, you got Sony, you got MGM, you got Miramax, you got Columbia. Now we have Amazon, we've got Netflix. There's all these different ways that people consume content. And every one of these companies, they want sticky content. They want great content. Is this a good era to be a writer?
I think it's becoming a great era. And I think that the shift is the studios in the feature world have always had a stranglehold on everything,
right,
which is great. But Amazon, Netflix, they bought more films at the Sundance Film Festival than the major studios.
Really?
So they're coming in with their own money. They're developing their own product. And it's a great time. You know, I guess it's sort of like what Uber's done with taxis and Airbnb has done with that. Amazon's done with self-publishing.
There's no rules.
And you have you know, there's a lot of middlemen, and this allows what's happening. I see is there's more creativity. The creative people are getting a better chance. They're getting more control. Mm-hmm. That's it. You can see it in the streaming and on all the series. You know, some of the great writing, I think, is going on now in television.
No question.
And in television, it's interesting. A lot of the producers, and people really don't always know what a producer is, and sometimes I'm not sure I do, but in the film, you know, they try to put the elements together, the star, the right, you know, mm-hmm. all of that. But they're usually not the creative people all the time. There's some good ones that really are. But in TV, most of the producers are writers or have been writers. So you can see it in the product. I mean, they're really well written.
Exceptionally written, yeah.
And so there's more need for that now with Netflix, Amazon, all of that. So I think it is a good time.
What's fascinating to me is when you look at, you know, past television, every time you're doing these TV shows, you had to reestablish, right? You go to commercial, you have to reestablish.
Right.
The nice thing when you're doing the new shows, you're getting actors you never thought would be doing television. Kevin Spacey and some of these Robin Wright, some of these movie stars are moving to television because there's some freedom there, right? They're not dealing with the old television, which was it's 30 minutes, you're going to commercial. Right. They don't deal with that stuff.
Of course, that's all. P-rated, you know, PG-rated.
Yes.
And now it's not.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, some of the things, I think it's a great time because a lot of the material is dark. I actually like dark material.
I can tell you like dark material. Yeah. Fade to Black is, there's some dark stuff in there.
Yeah, there's some definitely dark stuff in there.
Yeah.
There's some humor and some fun and some other things too. But yeah, it's that type of thing. But if you're a Tarantino fan or if you're somewhere along those lines, then this new element with television and cable and streaming is great because you're not limited by that. And I think what draws in those actors is the material itself.
No question.
It's freedom, right?
It's great material. It's great writing. And it's the ability to, a lot of times, control their own destiny. You know Kevin Spacey can say, I want to go in this direction, and they're going to listen to him.
Yes. So I think the ground is shifting in a very positive way. I mean, I think it's awesome.
So the book came out how long ago?
Came out in March.
Okay, came out in March, and the response has been really good.
Yeah, I mean, it's really thrilling for me, too, and it's kind of ironic in another way. It's thrilling for me to have people read it and write nice reviews and get nice reviews. And it's been great because, you know, you think you have something, you think you're doing a good job, but you really don't know until it's out there. And, you know, the greatest critic in the world is the public. And when they respond to it's wonderful. And even friends I've had for decades, they might not have read my screenplays because they're not in the business. They know that I've made a living as a writer and they're reading it. And I just get such a kick out of it. Oh my gosh, you know, you've only known me forever, but now you're finally reading.
Well, because the reality is this is the first time the public is seeing your content, right? For years, you're writing for the studios and a lot of this stuff isn't getting made.
Yes.
You know, or it's you're sort of behind the scenes, you're rewriting other people's things.
Yeah, and screenplays people just generally don't pick up and
read. No, they're not picking that up. But now all of a sudden it's a novel that they can sit down and read and sort of get into your head.
Right.
And find out things about you that they didn't know about, right?
It's just been that element alone has been tremendously rewarding. And then, you know, I remember the first customer review I got from, you know, I have no idea who the person is, and it was positive. It just made me feel great.
Yeah.
And I use a lot of the elements that I try to use in my script writing in the book. I mean, the chapters are short. They kind of have a beginning and a middle and an end to them. And it rotates from the point of view of one character to another. So you get inside the head of these very twisted people, inside the head of Will Spire, inside the head of Dolan, who's an overweight homicide cop who's been there for 30 years. It looks like he belongs in Detroit rather than in Malibu.
Yep.
And, you know, there's a lot of great character stuff, but it moves it. It's a fast-paced book, and because you're seeing the train wreck, so to speak, from the inside, the voices and head of these multiple characters.
So to get it potentially made into a film, do you have to write a screenplay or do you present the book to the studios or to Netflix or to Amazon? What's the, because this is different for you, right?
It's
the first time.
It's a completely different world. Both my agent and manager were, I mean, we were just stymied on what even to do because the literary world is very different than the screenwriting world. You wouldn't think it would be much so, but it is. And I've learned a lot, you know, going through the process. I never wrote the book to be made into a film. Of course, I'd love that because I've already been writing screenplays for a while. But I think the way it works is, you know, a friend of mine got it to a producer who's works for HBO, and you know, she's going to read it because he thinks it would make a good series and that kind of thing. So I think with those contacts I have in the business, hopefully something could come that way. But for me personally, I'm just really enjoying the fact that people are getting to see it as a book.
Well, and
but you know, of course, they want to make it a movie or
you're a series.
Right,
you're all into it.
I mean,
it really does play as a series because there are so many different twists and turns here that.
And back to our conversation about what's out there now,
content,
with Netflix
yes.
and streaming, it is sort of right up in that alley. So, you know, as I said, everything is timing, and I've had some great timing and some not so good timing, and maybe this is, you know, maybe the timing's good on this. We shall see.
Did you go out and look for a publisher on this, or did you decide to publish it yourself?
We looked for publishers, and my manager, you know, sent out to different ones and stuff. So the self-publishing route, I think, is liberating for
really
a lot
is.
Of writers because you're, you know, if you do go that route, the book is up there. It's on Amazon. It's competing with the other, you know, Bob, you've published
a number. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think if, you know, I didn't get HarperCollins on there and I did have it, you know, go up through 2 months through two different divisions at HarperCollins up to a guy named Henry Ferris, who was the lead editor there. And, you know, they passed. But I'm used to that as a writer because the reasons they can pass on something can be anything.
Sure.
And it's hard in this genre, in the private detective genre, to break in. They have people that are already authors for them, like Patterson and others that have.
That they know they're going to sell X number of books, right? That's already in the bank.
So with a small publisher, you know, you don't have some of the punch they have. But I think that just the product being out there is awesome.
Right.
I don't see any lag in you know, small to big in my life at this point.
Right. So now that you've done one,
yes,
is the goal to do more. I mean, obviously, if the book sells well,
yes,
that lends itself to.
I mean, if I could wave a
second one,
if I could wave a magic wand,
yeah.
I love writing in this form, this narrative prose, so much that I would just write one after another. But you know, that depends upon. What else is happening in the screenwriting world and in the pocketbook world and everything else? So we shall see.
The publishing industry is different now. You know, it used to be that people got big advances, and their thought was, "Hey, we'll if you didn't get good advance, the concept was the more money you got up front, the more they were going to promote the book because they had to get their money back."
Right,
and
you found that to be true.
Yes, no question about it. Because otherwise, they'll just throw something against the wall, and if it doesn't work, they don't care because they really didn't invest anything in it. So with what you're doing is you're setting yourself up so that with the next book that you'll get the upfront dollars, and then you get the promotion. Then it all works together.
Some upfront dollars, but it's not a lot. You know, I'm sure it would have been more at HarperCollins, so to say.
Yes.
But I think that, you know, you've hit the nail on the head. It has changed a lot, but, you know— Well, in your experience,
yes.
How do you feel? Because you're published.
Yeah, I've been published, but I'm in a very small niche. You know, triathlon, right, is very small. So I can reach that niche fairly easily because I pretty much, you know it all, know those folks, and I know the publishers in that industry. But you're not going to get a lot of dollars up front, and because of that, they're not going to do a heck of a lot. You've got to promote it yourself.
We had no idea. We're going into at this point because the screenwriting business is so different.
Right.
And I found it interesting that, you know, your upfront money has to be paid back with sales.
Yes.
You know, at first I thought, oh, that upfront money, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go put that in. But
it's beginning of the conversation. No.
Beginning of the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
What's going to get paid, what's not going to get paid back. And the percentage, I mean, I think a lot of other people have to weigh in self-publishing that their royalties are 70%. At Amazon, or you know, 40%, while your traditional royalties in a publisher are 5 or 10%. So you have to weigh as a self-publisher, or whether you're going with a publisher, how much is that help worth? You know, are they really going to get a lot of publicity out there for me, or is it going to generate book sales more, or should I go the self-published route because I keep more of my royalties?
Right. The hard part is with the way books are now, and Amazon is a culprit on this, because the reality is if I do a book, a coffee table book on the Iron Man, it's a $29 price. as soon as it comes, and my price is $15 to buy it from the publisher. As soon as the book comes out, Amazon puts it out there for $18, right? They rather than leaving it at the $29, which they could get all day, they discount it, which makes it ridiculous for me to go buy it for $15 and, you know, and sell it for $2 more and then ship it. You lose money.
Yes.
So the Amazon, to a certain degree, for the people who are, you know, getting sort of a lower end publisher, it makes it very difficult for them to make money on their own books. The only way they can do it is if they travel with the books, and then you can sort of charge premium because you're going to autograph them for people. But then you're schlepping all these books.
That's not a good idea.
No, it's not a good idea.
Very much.
So of the people you've worked, Wes Craven and Todd Black and Glenn A. Larson and Arthur M. Sarkisian, talk a little bit about what you've learned from these different folks.
I've learned a lot. I mean, some people are very creative, and they're very protective of their writers, and they're very honorable with their writers. They think the writers are, you know,
they're gold.
Yeah, and they have ideas or concepts or something, but then they turn to you, and you're supposed to just sort of go make the magic. I mean, that's what you do. There's others that almost seem like they're frustrated writers that want to be writers that sort of have to, as I say, they have to pee on it just to make it their own.
Yes.
And those luckily are, you know, Todd Black, who I've had, who's a producer at Escape Artist.
Uh-huh.
Sony, I've had 3 or 4 projects with him, and he's just, you can look up his resume. He's just golden. And he's the way he believes in writers, feels about writers, honors writing, it makes it much easier. And I think it makes the whole process flow better. All the names you just mentioned were like that. My first gig with Glenn Larson was a trip because he was such a legend, and he was, you know, older and later part of his career. And, you know, it was stuff under fire. He was, you know, that I even got through it was amazing, but I learned so much from him.
Right.
I think the greatest compliment he ever gave me was your mind facilitates you think like this. And coming from him, I'm like, okay, I don't know if that's, you know, if that's good or bad, but but I, you know, a good producer will respect writing, respect the writer.
Did you take anything from those guys that went into Fade to Black?
Yeah. There's, you know, Fade to Black takes place from Malibu to, you know, Bel Air to the underbelly of Hollywood and then to the Salton Sea. And a lot of the stuff that I've just experienced over the years is woven in there. You know, some of it dark and twisted, some of it not. But it's an interesting town, and it's an industry that is constantly evolving.
Yeah,
and I think that's, you know, sort of where we are now. And it's not a kind industry.
No, it never has been.
Never has been.
No, it spits people up.
The writing profession is, you know, you're very isolated. I'm not, you know, as an actor, there was part of me always wanted to be out there.
Sure,
you know. Love that, social. And another half of me is this person that can sit in a room for hours and just write.
Yeah.
And that's what's interesting. That's what's so fun about the book. I mean, as a writer, all you have in front of you are blank pages, choices, and your creativity. And I've always been, you know, amazed that anything ever comes out right after with all that said and done.
What's the writing process for you? Is it something that, because a lot of people, they need to go to an office. It's very difficult for them to do it at home. They get distracted.
Yeah.
What's your process?
I write at home. You know, once I have the treatment down, and I usually run that by my agents and, you know, see how that works, my agent, my manager, then I'll start writing. And I write in the morning, get up, have a cup of coffee, write, get lost in it, and then if I'm, you know, take a break, and then sometimes come back later in the day and write. And then I pretend that I'll quit, but then I end up printing out pages and going over the pages later at night, and you sort of get obsessed with it. And you're in your head all the time.
Right.
You're in your head with the voices of these characters, with everything else. And, you know, people ask, if you write a darker thing, how can you be with these, you know, voices and characters? Well, it is still fiction. And, you know, they are your creation, I guess. You don't mind it that
much. Put them away somewhere.
You have a little wall of it, right?
Yeah.
But, so it becomes like, you know, you become obsessed with it, and you really don't know how good something is until it's done. And you can send a script out, and people can pass on it or get rejected, or you get accolades. And it's just, this is the nice part, Bob. I get to come and talk to you about it and you know, be out here, you know, doing it, or going to meetings at the studios is wonderful.
Yes.
But, you know, you spend a lot of time in isolation wondering if that's going to do it. And that's why I have a friend of mine who's a screenwriting professor back at North Carolina School of the Arts. And I go back there and speak to the students, and I tell them the number one thing you have to love is the process. you know, don't do this for money or fame. No. There's easier things to be done on both cases.
Passion.
You have to, exactly.
It's got to be. Well, basically, and that goes for any business.
Any
right?
business.
If you run
all,
from passion.
All your viewers that,
yeah,
you know, triathletes, anything. It's yeah. about passion.
Yeah. If you try to do it for dollars, it never works.
It's nothing.
So is the process different if you're writing a script or you're writing Fade to Black?
Yeah, I don't think the process is different. Obviously, it takes much longer to write a book than a mm-hmm. screenplay, and the screenplay can take long too. Like they say, writing is rewriting, so you know you go over it. I always try to really polish one chapter or one scene mm-hmm. before I move on to the next.
Right.
I know that some writers write through the whole book, then they try to come back, or write the little script and try to come back. That just doesn't work for me. I just go over it and over and over, and then when I move on, I know I have something good. Of course, go back and edit it, go back and
sure.
rewrite it. But that process is the same. It's the creative process of the book that I like so much, because you can, as I said, you're in the character's head,
mm-hmm.
what they see, what they feel, what they taste, what they smell. You can't show any of that in a screenplay.
No,
you don't know
it.
What they think.
Yes.
You don't know what they feel.
That's
you don't,
a good
unless,
point.
Unless they say something,
right.
or there's an action the actor does. And when you read a script, that's how the script should be, because that's how the movie's going to be.
So
you can't
when
just say, oh, he's angry.
Yeah. When you're writing Fade to Black, were there points where, you know, you're moving forward and you're realizing, uh-oh, I got to go back because this doesn't connect now?
Fortunately not. And I just think that's because, I mean, it doesn't mean you don't go back.
Out so
and
well.
Yeah, so plan out so well. But
yeah.
I think I'm sort of lucky in that I can look at my writing
mm-hmm.
very after I put it down for a while, print out some pages. I can look at it as if I didn't write it. And so I don't have a problem cutting things or doing. And I know a lot of my writing friends do.
So you can take your ego out.
They're like, yeah, they don't, with anything they wrote, they don't want to touch.
Of course.
So I just, I'm able to somehow view it as if I was reading somebody else's thing. Yeah, that doesn't work.
No.
Yeah,
I could never do that until, you know, it's funny. I never would look at, when the magazine came out, I couldn't look at the magazine.
Oh, right? Really?
Yeah, because if I found something, a typo or anything like that, or something I didn't like, you couldn't change it at that point.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And I couldn't appreciate it until months later. So I would read it 3 months later because I can't change anything at that point, right?
Exactly.
And I can't be upset at myself. But it was really difficult to look at it within that first month or so. I had to give it time and space.
Give it some time to distance yourself
yeah.
from it. Right.
So with Fade to Black, what's the in terms of the era? What era are we talking about?
Oh, it's contemporary. It's now.
Okay.
Yeah. The prologue starts 17 years ago.
Yes.
With a young man who feels he was born that day, standing on the top of the H of the Hollywood sign.
Hollywood sign.
Waiting for the bender to arrive, and we're not sure who that is.
Right.
And there's some violence that takes place in that
is.
Scene, and then we flash forward to present day.
Yeah,
and it's you know, as I said, it's woven. There's a lot of different twists and turns, and from that very first scene, from that very first sentence, which I believe is the young man was born today.
Yes,
and he would have been alive for 18 years tomorrow, but he was born today.
Yeah,
that links into the very very last chapter, last few lines.
And you knew that when you first started writing it.
I did.
That's amazing.
Because
that blows me away.
That's the plot. And it's that type of twist in this book that you can go back, and similar to the screenplay I have with Arthur Sarkissian
yeah.
called Leith, you can go back and reread the book after the big twist in the end, and you will see things that you didn't realize that were
at
there.
At the time.
Because the twist is so enormous, and it's all layered throughout.
Yeah.
So that's why I say you come up with a specific, real specific treatment, and then that's already in there. So it sort of guides it.
So, obviously, you've read a lot of books and a lot of screenplays and seen a lot of movies. Which ones were you read the book and then saw the movie and said, that really connects? Because people always go, gosh, that was nothing like the book. Well, the book was 300 pages, right? And you're trying to do a movie in 90 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, and the book, you're in the character's head again. So, you're forming your own vision in your mind as you read the book of what this movie looks like in your brain.
Right.
And that's why people are so disappointed when they go see the movie, because that's not the movie that was playing in their head.
Right.
That's not the characters
exactly.
that they envisioned. That's
yeah,
not
yeah.
what it is. So it makes it harder. I've seen the new phase is they're making books from the movies. They'll make the movie like,
call. Oh, yeah, they start with the movie.
They start with the movie and then
interesting.
They have, yeah, I've noticed that a little more.
That's
like
fascinating.
The new King Kong movie, I forget what it's called, but
yeah.
I saw today that they had on Amazon, they had the book version of that, but the
Kong.
Movie was made first.
Yeah.
So I guess there's that going on too.
Some of your favorite reviews.
Not sure if I answered your question.
Yeah, you did. Yeah. What some of your favorite reviews so far? And is it hard? Because like you said, with your screenplays and everything else, people might say, hey, we love it, and it just doesn't fit for us. And so you sort of take your ego out of it. This is you. When you write a book, so if somebody says, I don't like it, it seems like you would take it more personally.
I think I would. So far...
They've all been good so far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's really nice. And I just get a real kick out of it. I mean, I think I was excited, as excited with the first review that came in from, a random reader than I was at selling a big strip. It was just really exciting for me because I'd never been there before.
Right.
And it's been a journey. The whole literary world is completely different, and I'm sort of glad that Amazon is breaking it up, though the things you brought up say were true. I know a girlfriend of mine that was very familiar with the Manson killings, and she'd known the sister of Tate very well, and she wrote a book on it. And nobody would see the book. She sent it around to all the publishers.
Sure.
She sent it to one publisher, and the publisher wrote back to her and said, well, your query letter said that this was a novel and a book. Which is it? Well, I'll never know because I threw your letter into the trash. And this is the snobbery that you have out there.
That you're dealing with.
And she later got it published because she was an assistant director sitting on a set in L.A. And a guy came out for a cigarette break and he happened to be a publisher. She got it published. She had TV appearances, book tour, everything. But that's the snobbery that they're breaking up. I also heard that for Barnes & Nobles, there used to be one buyer for 250,000 titles of fiction.
My God.
So it's all
his opinion.
There was a female, and she was known by her first name, no last name needed. Gatekeepers, they call it. This is breaking it down. Amazon is the biggest
bookstore. Allowing you,
in the world.
If you believe,
yes.
You can produce your own book.
Yeah, and then you can put it out there to let other people do it. Kindle version, book version, audio version, whatever you want. And it goes, here, Europe, Asia, all over the place. So it's
very similar to what happened in music, where you get someone like Justin Bieber doing his mom filming the guy, and next thing you know, the guy's a star, where he might not have ever gotten.
Never
been discovered by anybody.
Exactly. So I'm all for letting the talent be judged by the public, or the talent be there. There's still, in my opinion, too many middlemen, in the film business. Again, back to the television business, the writers a lot of times are the producers. I was fortunate enough to be brought in as a creator of a show, which you during a certain season you go out and you pitch television series to the studios and the networks. And I got one. I got a deal on one by an NBC, and they only choose a few to make and do all that. But it was really fantastic, because if that had gone, I'm not only the creator, I'm, executive producer, writer, all of that. And the other people you bring in, they would have brought in what they call a showrunner, who somebody has experience with this. Well, he's a writer too.
Sure.
And the other writing teams are writers too. So you're always dealing with these creative minds that do what you do, instead of a studio executive or a studio producer who's really never written or created anything in their life. They're just kind of a go-between to put the elements together.
And they're there sort of to stomp on you.
And I think that's why you see all the good writing in TV now.
Yeah.
You're surrounded by other writers.
I love that. Again, the book is called Fade the Black. And if you were, for people out there who have not heard of the book before, what do you want them to know?
I just think the best thing to do is, just go on Amazon. I love the look inside, version I have there. And you can read sample chapters and see if it's your cup of tea. Read some of the reviews and see if it's your cup of tea. I mean, obviously, all books aren't for everyone.
Right.
All movies aren't for everyone. But I love that feature that they have, because you can read quite a bit and see if that voice speaks to you or it's something you're interested in. So that's
a cool thing right nowadays. Because you're not guessing.
You're not guessing.
It's something that works for you.
Exactly.
It's your type of book.
Yes. So I would just, suggest doing that. And I appreciate any support.
Yes.
For arts, artists, and writers. Just please take a look.
So where are you now with some of these other scripts that have been
Well, the one that I'm most interested in is the one that Arthur Sarkisian's attached to. That I think we may have a shot at actually going into production on it. And I would love that. I've been close multiple times.
Right.
I had one that was in pre-production in England when the financial collapse happened. All the money fell apart.
You had didn't you have a good actor connected to one of them?
Yeah,
two of
we
them?
Had Matthew Fox.
Uh-huh.
Also, another script had Kurt Russell attached to it. Had a Writers Guild strike that messed that one up. So I'm hoping that that we're due. Yeah.
I love that.
Back to the Bogart quote, need a little bit of luck. So
luck
maybe,
is good.
Maybe the timing is right now. I would love to have one, you know, before I fade off into the ether someday.
Now, do you still do some acting as well?
I just did a little bit of acting down here in Carlsbad.
Oh, yeah. You're live acting.
That was
fun.
That was a blast.
Yeah, I bet you had a good time
with
it.
Did
I came
not?
And watched
yes,
it. It was
did.
Phenomenal. It was really
nice
fun.
Nice little 250-seat theater, so that was great.
Very intimate. I liked that a lot.
Yeah, so that's about it. Nothing more professional than that.
And, hopefully we'll have a bestseller here with Fade to Black, so then you can decide who you want to produce the film.
That would be great.
I'd love
Perhaps
that.
You, Bob Bass.
Yeah, exactly. That'll happen anytime soon. Carl Bakke has been our guest. Carl, thank you so much for coming in. And people can just find the book at Amazon.com.
Find the book. Just type in Carl Bakke, K-A-R-L-B-A-K-K-E,
uh-huh.
or the title Fade to Black. I think there is more than one title that way, so maybe the name will be the quicker route.
Right.
And look on the Look Inside deal and check it out and read some of the reviews. There's some very extensive reviews there.
There really are.
Sound like they're written by the New York Times or something.
And the cool part is the cover of the book is really awesome. But,
and the cover of the book, there's a, you know, it's shows a Hollywood sign in red and then the hills there. And if you look a little closer, there's couple eyes.
Yes.
One is blue, one is black. That also relates to part of the book, the finality of the book. And so it's all layered in there, sort of like it is throughout the story.
Love
but glad you liked the cover. Appreciate
it. I did. It was phenomenal.
Good. And you can see my bio on the back, and there's an author page on Amazon that you can click to. Hopefully we can put this broadcast on there. And
no question. We'd love it.
So anybody that would love to do it, I appreciate staying in touch that way. It'd be awesome.
Carl, thanks so much I love it when people come in studio. That's always that's the best way, right?
I love being here. Thanks so much, Bob. I really appreciate it.
We'll do it again.
That sounds great.
Carl Bakke has been our guest again. The book is Fade to Black, his first novel, and you're going to meet Will Speier and all the other people in his life.
That's right.
And it takes you on it. It is a e-ticket ride. Talking
Definitely
back to
an
Disney.
E-ticket ride.
Love that.
Thank you.
Again, we are brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series, by VeloFix.com, the coolest mobile bike shops around, by ATVSwimSpas.com, the official training vessel for six-time Ironman World Champion Dave Scott. Check out challengedathletes.org. We just sent out 2,448 grants, totaling $3.7 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. You can go to donatecaf.com to donate to CAF anytime. We are also up on babbittville.com, on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives here. Hold on, everybody. We will be right back.